Yale Strom, a professor and artist in residence in the Jewish Studies program at San Diego State University, is something of a modern-day Renaissance man. Steeped in old-world traditions, the violinist-composer delights in bringing all but forgotten klezmer music and Yiddish songs from the former Soviet Union, Central Europe and the Balkans to the stage. Brian Kennedy has more.
While perhaps best known as a leading figure in the klezmer music revival, which began in the United States in the 1980s, and as the frontman for the ensemble Hot Pastrami, Yale Strom is also a dedicated ethnographer. As such, he has been literally instrumental in preserving both in print and on the silver screen the stories behind the klezmer music of the Jewish but also Romani communities which spawned it. I caught up with the scholar-artist ahead of a packed performance at the Meisel Synagogue in Prague, where he placed a special focus on the songs from pre-war Carpathian Ruthenia, the hinterlands of First Republic-era Czechoslovakia, and of Ukraine. I began by asking him the role that music played in his home growing up in Detroit.
My mother played some piano. And my father said he played the radio very well, you know, the volume. But there was a lot of records. They loved music. My father loved American folk labor songs, Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, Big Bill Brunsey, blues, some jazz, and then a lot of classical music. My parents loved the Russians, particularly my mother, Mussorgsky, Rimsky, Korsakov, and Tchaikovsky. And we had Jewish music, singing songs, though, not, you know, singing around the table. We called them table songs on the Friday night services, Saturday afternoon after Sabbath, going to shul, to synagogue. So some were in Yiddish, some were in Hebrew, some were just bim bam, you know. So I grew up in a home, it was a traditional, you know, middle-class American home, but filled with a couple different traditions. One, a Jewish tradition from Eastern Europe. On my father's side, it was Poland, today it's Belarus, Ukraine, and my mother's side, Lithuania and Germany, Central Europe, Germany. So with a strong Jewish tradition, but we were not Orthodox, though. We kept kosher in the home. I stayed home for Jewish holidays, so some people would say, it sounds like he's Orthodox. But we didn't keep the Sabbath in the terms of, you know, we would drive to the beach. And my home had the strong tradition of Jewish culture, particularly also Hasidic, the Kabbalistic side, because my grandparents, great-grandparents came from Hasidim from Belarus. But I was also imbued with a strong sense of social consciousness, which is very Jewish, I'm going to say, to care about the other, the other person who does not have as much as you have, or they're not free or something. It's not enough just to care about yourself and your immediate family. Of course, that's important, but also the stranger.
I've read that you started playing the violin in third grade.
Yes.
And part of that was it was great to get out of the classroom, but you grew quickly to really love it.
Right. Mrs. Baker. I would not be here talking to you today if it wasn't Mrs. Baker. Some people can have such an influence on you, you don't realize it at a young age. And right, I was happy at the time because it just meant I got to miss some regular class. Middle school and high school. Then we had moved to San Diego. My father had become a professor by then. He had been an elementary school teacher. But around 13, I was not liking the violin anymore. I shouldn't say that. I liked it, but I didn't like how much I had to practice. And so my parents weren't the kind of pushy, my son has to be a violinist or something. No, they said, no, we'll stop the lessons, and you just take it, pick it out when you want. So my violin teacher saw that there was a youth community orchestra that was auditioning, and she said, would you like to try out for it? And I kind of a competitive person, so I said, sure. So you come the first day of orchestra practice, and they have a name tag, and they said, oh, and your seat number. So I'm going Yale Strom. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 29, 30, 31, 32. There are 16 first violinists. I was certainly not in the first section. And there are 16 seconds. And I was number 32, sitting closer to the trombones and the French horns than I was to the first violinist. But what was the difference? The real crux of the story is I was making music with other people, with friends. I wasn't just playing in my room. And for me, music is a social activity. It's to be shared. It's to make people laugh, cry, wonder. To jump ahead many years, I finished college, had a couple degrees, American Studies, and I had a degree in art, and I wasn't doing well in that, so I thought, law, I'll go to law school. It's a, you know, and to be a good lawyer, and a lawyer, whether they're a civil rights lawyer or a defense attorney or something. But so while I was getting ready to enter law school, I went to a klezmer dance. Klezmer being, for those who are listening to the interview don't know, it's Jewish music, functional dance music, wedding music from Eastern Europe. Yes, there are Yiddish songs now to it, but the singing was a part of it, but the first part was it was for dancing rather than for listening to a concert. Anyhow, I went to the dance, and it was not in a synagogue, nothing Jewish, and it was sort of a big band. They're improvising, and I went up to the leader of the band during intermission, and I said, you know, could I jam with you? Can I join you? Would you, another fiddler? And he basically said, you know, don't call us, we'll call you. So, okay, you know. So I came home that night, and just a light bulb went off in my head. I said, you know, if you can't beat him, join him. No, if you can't beat him, form your own. And I decided to form my own band. But it's got to be a little different than his. He's already on the scene here in San Diego. How to make it different? I'm going to have a different repertoire. And I saw his repertoire. I looked at the music stands, yeah, from the libraries and so forth, good. But I said, I bet there might be melody still in the minds of certain people in archives we don't know about in Eastern Europe than the East Bloc. So I called the law schools that I had gotten accepted the next day without telling my parents, and I took myself out of law school, bought a one-way ticket then to Vienna, the portal to the former East Bloc, and I went to a good friend of mine in high school who was a bassist, a virtuoso who was already playing like a symphony at age 17, and he loved folk music, and he said, he's actually of Slovak, Czech roots, his last name is Pekarek, as he says it, Pekarek. He says, yeah, go, man, I'll be waiting for you. And I said, yeah, I'll be back in a couple months. Cut to 13 months later, I come back with, you know, meeting Jews, meeting Roma, meeting survivors from the Holocaust, having them sing me a melody, or maybe they had some old notes, or they didn't know, but they knew somebody who knew something, or they had a memory of a wedding when they were young, and just telling me ethnographically what happened at weddings. Did the town come? Who was invited? And, you know, what role did the musicians play? And I came home with these interviews on my tape recorder and photographs and music, and I formed my band, Hot Pastrami, with Jeff, but also our fellow mate who we knew since high school named Fred. So he was bass, and Fred is a great classical guitarist. At the level of people who are listening, he studied with Andre Segovia. So if people know classical guitar, not just anybody says, I'm going to study with Segovia. Segovia says, no, you can study with me, before he passed on. Cut to, I fell in love with Europe, particularly Eastern Europe, and I saw, you know, maybe I can use my music, my interests of stories, of ethnography, oral history. And I went back again for another major trip, and I took photos, and I eventually had a major photo exhibit in Chicago on Michigan Avenue with my big flag out. I was so proud, like, wow, I did it. I was with a friend. We had co-photographed it together, me and Brian Blue, and then a book. And so the rest, so I sort of created this profession, which brings me here these years later to Prague to play a klezmer concert. The first book was called The Last Jews of Eastern Europe. I'm very proud of that book because that is the biography of that year of wandering.
1981, right?
Very good. 1981, right.
And since then you've been back
multiple,
75, 80 times.
Exactly. Trying to always learn some new kernel, a piece of history, music as well. So I'm grateful that I've been able to create this. You know, I'm a professor now. I teach at San Diego State University. I teach in the anthropology department. I teach in the Jewish studies department. I teach in the history department, depending on the course. But the violin is my third appendage. The violin is this language. And, you know, I would never have been accepted, I know it for a fact, by the Roma as easily. But as soon as I played some of their tunes and played Jewish, they said, you know, of course, when I said I was Jewish, they went with their fingers like a hook because they had an affinity. Because, well, you've suffered like we suffered, so we have empathy for each other.
Listening to some of your earlier interviews and the origins and intertwining influences and all the rest, I was reminded of the Argentine jazz player Oscar Alemán, who used to have arguments with Django Reinhardt about who invented jazz.
Not many people know that.
Yeah, well, I'm a fan. And Reinhardt...
What did Reinhardt say to him?
That it was gypsy music,
right.
Roma music. I wonder to what extent there's a similar kind of argument. Where did klezmer come from?
Well, I think to put the question to rest, I simply say the word klezmer music, let's just say Jewish music, is older than the word Judaism, older than the word Christianity, older than the word Islam. It's older than the three Abrahamic religions. It's the DNA of Jewish music are these scales of wandering tribes in the Middle East, Central Asia. Yes, they have a Middle Eastern flavor. Some want to use the word Arabic. I say, yes, I'm Jewish, but even before this religion called Judaism, this monotheistic religion, I'm a Semite. I'm of the Semitic tribe. There were Hittites and Moabites, and you know, so I'm one of the Ites. So the DNA of the Jewish music is these Middle Eastern, even as I say, Central Asian scales. Now, as the Jews traveled willingly, and sometimes they were forced to, any minority that's been pushed to the margins gravitates to what the majority is allowing them to do. You can entertain me, but because we don't take that seriously. So Jews gravitated to some as musicians. And also another way to inculcate yourself into the majority society is to listen to the local music and adapt it, and then adapt it to your way. So I really say, do we really know? We can hear these ancient scales. We don't know for sure the songs, but when we hear something that sounds very... It sounds like a polka, a mazurka. Sure, Jewish musicians, itinerant Jewish musicians played it. Why not? They're smart. They're going to say, hey, if I only play this kind of Jewish music, who's going to hire me? Maybe only these Jews. I got to be hired by the Poles, by the Ruthenians, by the Slovaks. You know, as we say, Yiddish Shakup, you got to have a Jewish head. You know, and so they had a wide repertoire, and they had good ears. So it's older than the Roma, because the Jews have been in Europe in the diaspora much longer, I mean, from the Roman times, where the Roma came here only by, you know, 11th century, 11th, 12th century. So over 1,000 years. So these scales, the Roma heard some stuff, but of course the Roma are coming from India, and they brought some of that melisma, that crying lament, that interesting bend notes, I say gray notes. You know, it's hard to play Roma music and Jewish music in terms of the roots on a piano. Piano, you have your black keys and you have your white keys. So I tell my students, so professor, what keys do you play? On the gray keys. And they look at me like, there are none. That's right, and you can't play it on the piano. We don't have frets on our vocal cord. We can bend notes. So Jewish music is the gray notes.